This is Hacker Public Radio episode 3383 for Wednesday, the 21st of July 2021. Today's show is entitled, My Geeky Experiment, Part 1. It is hosted by Claudio Miranda and is about 17 minutes long and carries a clean flag. The summary is Claudio talks about how he revived his lowly SSE PC 901 netbook with Opened.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hey everyone, this is Claudio Miranda, aka Claudio M, on the internets. I'm recording this episode of Hacker Public Radio because it's been a while since I've done so. So, Ken, here's my submission. Anyway, I wanted to record an episode on some of my experience that I've had with my old Asus EPC 901. Now, if you aren't very familiar with the Asus EPC line of computers. These are a series of netbooks that came around, started around 2007 and kind of continued along for a few years after that. Most of them actually had an Intel Atom processor, very low power, and in some instances, most instances, a low performance processor. But it did the job for what it was meant to be. It was supposed to be just a device for basic internet use, but a lot of people started wiping the internal operating systems and putting their own Linux distributions or preferred Linux distributions on them at the time. And after a while, the distros started including support for the all the various components inside of them. I wasn't so much into the BSDs at the time, but I would imagine a little after that, they probably went ahead and added support for it. So I've had this device for a long time. I've had it for about 10 years, more so maybe at this point. It's been in and out of use as the years have progressed, especially since I've switched. That used to be my main, my daily driver for a long time, and then I switched from that to a Toshiba Portage M400, which I ran Linux on for a while before I upgraded to the HP ProBook 4540S with a Core i3 processor. And I stopped using my Asus. I had actually Lubuntu, 14.10. As a matter of fact, I actually have a series of blog posts, which I'm going to turn into a series of episodes for Hacker Public Radio. And it's called My Geeky Experiment, except geeky is spelled with three E's, as you would see on the EPC name. So I'll post a link to part one of that, which is what I'll be talking about. I'll put that in the show notes. So I had this EPC for a long time, the 901, and I went ahead and I pulled it out of storage. I said, well, I still have this thing. Let me give it a try. It had, now I'm looking at the post right now. It had Lubuntu 14.10, which was the last OS I ran on it, but I had stopped using it because it was giving me some problems. As a matter of fact, I think it would just kernel panic or something wouldn't load right. I wasn't getting the login screen. So I just kind of set that aside with the intention of getting back to it and trying to troubleshoot what was wrong with it. And then I completely forgot about it. And then just life got in the way and whatever. But anyway, I decided to pull it out and see if I could probably get it back to life, get it working again. So I went ahead and I plugged it in, and lo and behold, this was sometime, let me see, when was this? This was about last year, sometime around last year. I'm looking at blog posts. It's January 4th, 2020 when I did this. I decided to give it another go. So yeah, I went ahead and I pulled this device out from storage, and I went ahead and plugged it in, and yeah, it started crashing, and it just kind of kernel panicked and nothing was working. So I said, let me try something. I went in, opened it up, kind of reseated everything, reseated the RAM, reseated the secondary internal SSD that it has, because the one I have actually has two SSDs, or what I thought, actually, I'm getting ahead of myself here. It has a 4 gigabyte internal and a 16 gigabyte removable SSD. Now, just a bit of a spoiler here. I came to find out later on that the 4 gigabyte internal wasn't soldered. Asus kind of just referred to it as just internal. So I just assumed that it was not replaceable, but apparently you can replace that. And I'll get into the details on a later episode on this. So yeah, it had I went ahead and reseated the 16 gig, removable SSD, or at least the easily removable SSD from the bottom of the device. And I said, well, let me reseat all this. And then after I went ahead and did that, I said, let me turn it back on and see if I can get OpenBSD. I was already big into the BSDs. I had played around with FreeBSD for a while. Then I played around with OpenBSD, and I fell in love with OpenBSD, as everybody pretty much knows at this point. But if you don't, now you do. And so, yeah, I went ahead and I installed. I prepared a OpenBSD installation USB disk, because there's no way to do it from an optical drive on that device. So I went ahead and I turned it on, and right after I turned it on, I realized just reseating everything got the operating system working again, the Lubuntu that was on there. So I was at least happy that was working, and I went ahead and just kind of logged in to take a look, kind of a nostalgic view of it, and it was working fine, you know, obviously by 2020 standards. Of course, it's right now, the date is July 11th, 2021. So it's been about a year and a half since this experiment was done. And yeah, given what we've all been through for the past year and a half, I don't think anybody saw this coming by the time I posted this. But anyway, going back to what I was saying. So I decided to, after I played around with Lubuntu for a while, I decided to reboot it and install OpenBSD, which at the time was 6.6. So I went ahead and decided to install it, and everything surprisingly went through just fine. The installation process on OpenBSD is very simple. It's very Spartan. The only thing you might get hung up on is the partitioning. I think FDisk is the tool used to perform the partitioning, but I could be wrong. If anybody knows or wants to correct me, you can go ahead and post in the comment section. But yeah, that was about it. Once you kind of grasp how that works, it's pretty much a straightforward install. It's very simple, very quick. It'll install the base sets depending on which installation image you download. I usually get the one that says install. And the version number of OpenBSD, which brings all the sets included, but you can do either one. I think there's a net install of some sort. But if you go to openbsd.org website, you can pretty much find out from there when you go to the downloads page. Anyway, so I went through the install and I booted it up. I had a feeling that maybe something wouldn't work on it, but to my surprise, everything pretty much worked. The Wi-Fi was working. The disks were detected just without any issues. I didn't have any problems with the corruption or whatever. It loaded up. I went ahead and logged in because I installed it with the Xenokara Graphics X server. And of course, Xenodm is the login manager that comes by default. And once you log in, you're presented with FVWM as the default window manager. And yeah, I mean, it looks pretty nice. It ran pretty nice. And I was happy to get this machine working again. So once I did that, I actually copied the configuration files over from my Toshiba at the time, which I've since retired. That one was running OpenBSD for a good while. And I've switched that one now. I switched, moved the hard drive over to an old, probably a newer, I would say, because the M400 Toshiba had a Core 2 Duo processor. And this machine that it's the hard drive is running on now is a Latitude E6410 from Dell, which has a, I think it's a first generation Core i5. I can tell you right now, give me a sec. I'll look at it later. I believe it is. It's an M520. So I don't know if it's an i5 or an i3, regardless. That is now on there, and I copied the configuration files from that, from the Toshiba at the time, over to the netbook, to the EPC. And there's a procedure for doing that. You have to use package add. I don't remember the commands off the top of my head, but yeah, I mean, you can, if you go into the OpenBSD handbook, and there's a section on installing packages, and if you need to install the same set of packages over to another OpenBSD machine, there's a procedure there. I'll put that in the show notes. So yeah, I went ahead and copied that over, did the package add magic, and I was up and running with Fluxbox as my default desktop. There's no way I was going to run anything else, because this is a machine that, the EPC is a machine that only maxes at 2 gigs of RAM, plus the SSD that it has, the 16 gig, along with the internal one, the 4 gig internal one, is super, super slow. But it did the job, and it was running nicely, and I had Fluxbox running with my themes and all my other settings, my other config files, and all was well. Now, as far as performance, I have to say I was pleasantly surprised. I think it performed better with OpenBSD and Fluxbox than it did with even Lubuntu. But of course, I was running Mate Desktop on that at the time. So Mate tends to have a little more of a demand on the system. So I decided to go with something smaller, but it ran pretty well. I'll go ahead and include a video also that I did of the EPC in action. I had MPV running, playing an internet radio stream that I listened to. And I don't remember what else. I'll have to catch the video, but yeah, it actually performed quite well. Now, and everything worked right out of the box. The only thing that didn't work, of course, is Bluetooth. And the only reason that wasn't working is because OpenBSD does not support Bluetooth. Now, there is a supposed workaround to that. If you use a USB audio dongle, a Bluetooth USB dongle, that apparently is a workaround to get Bluetooth working on an OpenBSD machine. So just something to keep in mind. But yeah, I was very happy with it. And really all I'm using it for now is I use Firefox on it. At this point, it's running, at the time when I installed it, it was OpenBSD 6.6, which I then switched over to follow the current snapshots. But right now it's running 6.9. current, and from what I've been told, Firefox, I still have it installed, but it hasn't upgraded at all because it's been removed from the i386 OpenBSD tree. Something, from what I was told, it has something to do with Rust not compiling, or the Rust, the new Firefox version not compiling because of some issues with Rust on 32-bit. So going forward, it looks like with OpenBSD 7 and with the current snapshots, it's just 64-bit for Firefox, so, or any Mozilla-based, any type of Mozilla-based browser, and which means you're stuck with browsers like Midori or Lynx, You know, some of the any of the WebKit browsers are the options you'll have there. But for what I use it for, which is SSH to SDF and just SSHing to other machines here so I can get on IRC, it's a great little machine. I don't really need it to do much. I just need it to do the basics, and that's good for me. So if you have an old netbook lying around and wondering what you want to do with it, go ahead and just see about dropping an operating system on there. You can try one of the current Linux distros, although they might be a little heavy, but I'd highly recommend a BSD. They're really a lot, I don't want to say a lot easier, but if you're familiar with Linux, I think you should, you'll do all right with a BSD. There's a lot of differences with regards to the lower level stuff, but once you get used to it and how things work, the user land is pretty much all the same for the most part. So yeah, this is going to be my first episode back in a while. Hopefully sometime soon I'll go ahead and load, because I had actually a friend of mine send me an EPC 900A. He asked me if I was interested, and I was like, yeah, sure, I'll take it, and I'll put something else on that. So I got that, and I went ahead and I installed Haiku on it. So that one I'll leave for another episode. That will be part two, as a matter of fact. That's part two of my geeky experiment. But yeah, for part one, I managed to get this thing back in use. So I take it with me every day to work. I use it just to SSH to certain things. As far as Firefox, or at least the last Firefox that it runs, I can run it, but I would say, you know, if you're going to do so, stick to maybe one or two tabs. And even with that, loading is going to be pretty slow on today's web. But for anything static or even for accessing Gemini capsules, it's a perfect machine. So if you don't need the overhead of, you know, today's web, and you want to stick with less intensive technologies like IRC, SSH, or even text browsing, it's definitely a great machine, and you can breathe some new life into that old netbook if you still have it. Anyway, that's going to be it for me. Hope you enjoy it. If you have any comments, be sure to leave it in the comments section of this episode once it's posted. As far as I'm concerned, if you want to get in touch with me also, you can contact me on Mastodon. My Mastodon handle is @ClaudioM@mastodon.sdf.org. I've since moved from the mastodon.xyz. So feel free to hit me up there. Also, you can catch me on my email, and my email is claudio@linuxbasement.com. Anyway, thanks again, and be sure to record some episodes for Hacker Public Radio. Catch you again soon for the next episode in this series. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club, and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.